Serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 97-year-old Bill Barrett, who served in the Signal Corps during World War II and continues to serve as a volunteer docent at the beautiful Pueblo Weisbrod Aircraft Museum in Pueblo, Colorado. You know, every once in a while, I just have to step back and marvel at how many amazing veterans I've been privileged to meet in so many unique and fascinating places around our country. This was my first time ever to Pueblo, Colorado, and I was impressed to see how this city celebrates its military legacy by proudly labeling Pueblo the Home of Heroes. It stems from the fact that 4 different men from Pueblo, one from World War II, 2 from the Korean War, and 1 from Vietnam, were all awarded our nation's most prestigious decoration, the Medal of Honor. Just outside the convention center in Pueblo are statues of all 4 of those heroes, serving as the centerpiece of a tribute to all Medal of Honor recipients. The names of every single Medal of Honor winner, more than 3,400 of them, are all inscribed there. It's a striking memorial and definitely worth the trip to Pueblo, so check that out and then go shake Bill Barrett's hand at the Air Museum. And here's a question for you, Bill, that I haven't asked yet. With more than 3 years overseas during World War II, I know you're around a ton of servicemen. So how would you describe the men you served alongside all those years ago?
Some of them I liked, some of them I didn't, which is true of nowadays.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wherever you go.
Yeah, wherever you go. But we did have a good bunch of kids that worked for me. Yeah, I enjoyed every one of them. Corresponded with several of them after the war. They've all passed away. I'm the only one left of the 4. Wait, there's 5 of us that communicated for several years till they started passing away. Some of them I visited.
And BIAC wasn't your final stop.
I did get up into the Philippines to Okinawa, I'm thinking about.
Oh, Okinawa.
Oh, yeah, I did get to Okinawa, yeah.
Once it was secure already?
Oh, yes. Off the coast of Okinawa, there was a little town or a little island called Aishima.
Yeah.
Where Ernie Pyle was killed.
Exactly.
I went by the spot where he was killed. And later on in the years, my wife and I were in Hawaii, and I went into the punch bowl, and his horse went by where he was buried.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know much about Ernie Pyle because he was a very prominent correspondent during World War II.
Absolutely.
Now, the reason I went to Okinawa, our company, the Signal Company, repaired radar equipment for different units. Whenever it was repaired, they had to have somebody go with it to see it got to the proper place.
Uh-huh.
And I did take one of those trips. That's when I got into the Philippines and up to Okinawa and on Aishima.
Did you have a sense that the war was drawing to an end?
Oh, we knew it was over. In fact, the day I left Okinawa to go back to my unit, General MacArthur flew out of the same airstrip that I was at to go sign the peace treaty.
Well, speaking of other milestone moments, you know, I see a note here in the journal that you kept, basically, about finding out that President Roosevelt had died. Was that a message that you guys had come to your station?
Yes, yeah.
How did that hit you?
Pretty hard. He did a lot during the war for the communities and the country and the states, and I'm glad they kept him on all during the war instead of changing during the war.
I'm sure you had heard him on the radio on December 8th. Huh?
Oh, yeah.
And again, looking at the notes that you've put together, July of 1945, you've got a note here. It says, "The last letter from home informed me that both my mom and dad were in the hospital. I did not know what was wrong with my mom, but dad had been hurt helping someone move a piano. I didn't hear another word for 2 weeks." How hard was that?
It was pretty rough. But I knew something had happened to one of them. Because I didn't hear anymore.
So
my girlfriend quit writing to me, family quit writing to me. And the reason they did, because the guy in charge of the Red Cross there said, "Oh, he'll get to come home. All we have to do is let him know he'll get to come home." So don't, but I didn't.
You didn't get to come home.
Didn't get to come home.
And after all that waiting on pins and needles and that hopeless feeling of not knowing and having no way to find out, you finally got really bad news.
I got the news from a chaplain that called one night and wanted to talk to me. He wouldn't tell me anything over the phone. So I went to see him, and he told me that my mother had passed away. But it was no big surprise because I knew something had happened to one of them.
You'd prepared yourself for
that. I kind of prepared for it, yeah. But it was tough coming home and not having my mother there.
Oh, I imagine.
Yeah.
And here, you've been out there for 3 years in the Pacific, living in a tent.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some of the summers must have just been really brutally hot.
Hot and rainy seasons and stuff. And, yeah.
It's not a very comfortable existence.
Oh, no, no.
And the same week that Japan surrenders and there's so much to celebrate, you get this horrible news that your mother has died.
Yeah, she passed away on August 5th, and I think the war was over about that same time, if I remember right.
About 10 days later.
Yeah. Yeah. But they knew that it was coming to an end at that time back in the States.
Was there some celebration out where you were when you guys got that news that Japan had surrendered?
Yeah, quite a bit. A lot of guys were shooting off their guns and had fire. I don't know where they got fireworks, but some of them had fireworks and stuff.
I have no idea where they came from. Mostly with guns going off and guys hollering, and both when Japan surrendered and when Germany surrendered. Same thing.
How excited were you to come home?
Really excited. You'll never know how excited you are to get it discharged and get to come home and see your family and your girlfriend. That was the highlight of my Army career, I think.
Well, tell me about that moment. How did that all unfold?
I was discharged in Denver, and I came home on Rock Island Rocket, which is a train that came through my hometown. And my dad and my little sister, my girlfriend, and I don't know, 8 or 10, 12 of my friends were all there to greet me. It was a great time to see all of them and get to hug my girlfriend and get a kiss her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys didn't have that experience.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of them never came home.
Some, even if they did, 3 years is a long time to wait for a boyfriend.
Well, that's true. A lot of them got Dear John letters.
I'm sure there were some guys in Belleville that had eyes on Lillian.
Well, yeah, I'm sure of that.
So how long did you wait to pop the question?
I'm not sure how soon we talked about it, but we were married less than a month later.
Less than a month after you got home?
We were married on December 2nd.
Wow. Yeah. And when'd you get home?
November the 8th.
November the 8th.
Discharged the 7th and got home on the 8th.
You know, talking about dates, if you're over there in the Pacific living out of tents for more than 3 years, you spent a lot of holidays over there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What's it like to spend a Christmas or a Thanksgiving out there in the tropics?
They usually had a good meal for us on Christmas, Thanksgiving. You usually had turkey and all the dressings. That's about it.
Make you pretty homesick?
Yeah, it would, yeah.
When Christmas rolls around now, you ever think about those Christmases you spent out there?
Not too much. I don't think a lot about my time in the service.
So you wait all of a month to get married to Lillian after she's waited for you to get home for 3 years. You guys go on to have a couple sons. You've got a couple granddaughters. You ever think about what if? What if you were in the theater that night? What if you were one of those more than 406,000 Americans who didn't come home?
Yeah. What if I never made it home? Well, there wouldn't be two great boys, two great granddaughters.
Yeah. How does that make you feel?
Well, makes me feel pretty proud of all my family. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And thankful you came home.
Thankful I came home, and my sons both done real well. They've retired from big companies and got good pensions and stuff and doing real well.
And you told me one of your sons worked for NASA for decades and is still in that Washington, D.C. area. Have you been back to Washington and the National World War II Memorial?
Oh, yes. I got on that honor flight.
Uh-huh.
That they have. Are you familiar with that?
Very.
Okay. I went with that with my brother. He and I went together.
You and your brother got to go together.
On the honor flight, out of Denver.
How much trouble did you guys cause?
I don't know. He was in a wheelchair most of the time. He was getting along. He was 2 years older than I was.
Tell me about that experience. What'd you get out of it?
Oh, it's a great experience for me, especially being with him. Meant a lot to me, seeing it together.
And I know you tend to downplay your time in the war, even though you were overseas a lot longer than most World War II veterans.
That's true, yeah.
Did that honor flight experience, the way people treated you in D.C., the way they treated you back here in Colorado when you came back, did that give you a new perspective on what you had done and what it meant to people?
Well, not really. You know, I feel what I did was necessary. It had to be done. But I feel sorry for all those guys that were in the infantry and fighting and all that kind of stuff. And with what they did and what I did, I don't think I did too much. That's my feelings.
Well, I've heard a lot of guys say that to me. But but the rest of us know that we wouldn't be here without you.
Yeah, that's
your
true.
Sons wouldn't have been born, for sure, if you didn't come home.
Yeah.
The world would be a much different place.
That's true.
If you hadn't done what you did.
Yeah.
That memorial itself, when you look at all those gold stars,
what
comes to mind? What'd you think about when you were looking at that?
Well, you feel sorry for them that didn't make it back home.
Were there any moments of that trip back to D.C. that kind of stand out for you that were real impressive or meant something to you?
Yes. And they had Europe on one side, the Pacific on the other side, and they had the one named New Guinea.
And I spent a lot of time in New Guinea, so I got down beside it and had my son take a picture of me with the New Guinean right beside me. That might have been one of my highlights.
I bet when you're here in this gift shop, you get some opportunities to talk to people who certainly weren't alive when World War II was happening.
Right, yeah.
What's the most important thing that you think people need to know about what happened, about the young men and women that served our country during that time?
Well, I think they need to think about the people that never made it back home. They need to think about the people that served. That's about it.
What would you say that you're most proud of, Bill?
During my service?
In life in general, sure.
Oh, well, being married and having my family.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But during the war, I think probably what we did, the communication that we did for the service, probably the most important thing I did.
Were there ever nights over there in the Pacific where you're sitting in that tent and you're wondering, am I ever going to see Lillian again?
Yeah, you never knew. You could get hit, like I say, get hit in an air raid or have an accident of some kind and not make it.
And this one's out of left field. I've had a lot of guys talk about this, and I've heard every end of the spectrum. Some guys really feel like God was protecting them. Others, hey, it was just luck. I made it back. You have a strong opinion on that one way or the other?
Luck. I'm not a real good church goer. I go with my kids once, several, quite a few times. But one reason I kind of got out of it, when I was working back in Kansas, calling on drugstores, the three drugstores in my hometown wanted me to call on them on Sundays. So I kind of just got out of the habit of going to church at that time and never really got back into it too much. That's my fault.
Did you ever hear Tokyo Rose when you were over there?
Oh, yeah.
What do you remember about that? What kind of stuff did she say?
The streets were, Port Moresby were running with Yankee blood. And,
and you knew that wasn't true.
I knew that wasn't true. That's the main thing I remember that she was talking about,
So that just give you a chuckle?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story and helping us understand a segment of the war that a lot of people aren't familiar with, what the Signal Corps did. I got to ask you about this museum. I know you're only 97, but how long do you plan on continuing this, to come in here on Wednesdays and Saturdays and Sundays and volunteering your time?
I plan on having my 100th birthday party here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They going to fly a P-38 in for you?
Well, I doubt that. I doubt that very much.
That would take the cake, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What keeps you going?
I keep busy. Other than spending my time here, I belong to the Air Force Association. And we do different things at for veterans at veteran homes. And I particular them whenever I can if I'm not working here.
I like to ask people this when they've got your kind of attitude and your spirit of age is just a number. And you're not looking back, you're looking forward, seems like.
Yeah.
So what are you looking forward to? Are there some things that you haven't done yet in your 97 years that you're hoping to?
Well, I'll tell you something. In May, I'm going back to Kansas to my 80th graduation reunion.
But are there any others left?
But I think I'll be the only one there.
You're going to have a party by yourself.
Yeah.
Well, that's one way to be the guest of honor.
Yeah.
How about that?
And in August, my son is coming out from Virginia, and we're going up to in Wyoming to see the eclipse of the sun.
Well, that's exciting, too.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah.
Just one last thing. You spent 38 months out there in the Pacific. You don't know if you're going to make it home. You don't know if you're going to experience America again. What kind of perspective did that give you on what America stands for?
It's just our flag. We fly it here every day at the museum.
It looks like it's well protected out there, too.
Yeah, pretty much so.
There's pretty big guns sitting right in front of it.
Right in front of it.
Is there anything else about the museum you want to say?
One thing we do have out there in the museum is some what they call an instrument of surrender, some documents that were signed by the Japanese and the Americans on the Marzura in Tokyo Bay.
Yeah.
That's out there. And also a couple of pens that were used to write those signatures. And they got some stuff. They say it's MacArthur's pipe and his cap is out there.
Of course, I don't live here in Pueblo. You've lived here for the last 60 years. Do you ever get the sense that this museum is kind of a hidden secret or a hidden jewel that some people don't know about?
A lot of people from Pueblo come out here and say, I never knew this place was out here.
Well, maybe you'll get some other folks from other parts of the country that the next time they're on the I-25, they'll take a little detour and come say hello.
Yeah, we get a lot of people. We have signs out on the highway that tells about the museum, how to get here. Well, last year, we had people from every state in the union. We had people from 33 foreign countries.
How about that?
They visited our museum.
Well, I hope you get a few more. And I hope they ask for the 97-year-old docent with a picture of himself on Dick Bong's record-breaking P-38. That is Bill Barrett of Pueblo, Colorado. You can find that picture from 7 decades ago at hometownheroesradio.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where I also have a link to the Pueblo Weisbrod Air Museum and the Pueblo Home of Heroes Association. This week's show is recorded at an air museum. Next time, we're going to be at a high school, and we'll even let some of the students ask some of the questions. We'll look forward to that, but we're out of time for now. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.